we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, June 8th, 2018. I am your host, Jillian Walters, and I am joined here today by our control room operator, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
We have two terrific activists on the show today. President and founder of PETA, Ingrid Newkirk, joins us first. And in the second half hour, live from Chicago, Eva Hamer, music therapist and DXE undercover investigator. But first, we have a message about World Oceans Day from King Zoom the Vegan Kid.
The theme for World Oceans Day 2018 is preventing plastic pollution. Today, we are bringing light to the topic. But we need to be mindful of our plastic use every day of the year. They say that if we don't start doing something about our use of plastic by the year 2025, there will be more plastic in the ocean than fish. That is so sad if you think about it. 80% of all pollution in the ocean comes from us humans. I've got some tips on what you can do and a challenge for you. Today, stop using plastic. For example, I like to use a straw when I drink. So I have a bamboo straw and a metal straw. I use them at home and I take them when I go out. We don't have any single-use plastic bags or saran wrap in our house. We use a washable glass container to pack our lunches. And when you go grocery shopping, look for items that are not packaged in plastic and bring a cotton bag or a paper bag, reusable, to put your veggies in. My challenge for you today and over this next week is to post on social media just how you are going to move away from single use of plastic. Use the hashtag World Oceans Day. Kingdom the Vegan Kid out, be kind to the aquatic life, and be vegan.
We have a special guest coming into town on Thursday, June 14th. Ingrid Newkirk, founder and president of the organization PETA, will be speaking at the Vancouver Rowing Club at 7 p.m. She is on a world speaking tour, and this is her only Canadian stop. She is on the phone with me now. Hi, Ingrid. Welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on the show today. PETA has actually a special place in my heart. When I decided to stop eating animals, PETA was my go-to resource. It felt like I had a family member when I received my PETA magazine in the mail. It taught me about animal liberation, what was going on in the rest of the world, and it inspired me to be an activist. So thank you for this.
Oh, delighted. And we're still doing that.
Yes.
So we have the free downloadable, and we'll send it to you, Vegan Starter Kit. And, of course, we've got a website that has countless vegan recipes so that you can veganize anything you love to eat. And we've got tons of information on all the products that keep coming out onto the market. It's not the way it used to be. You can just get anything you like that's vegan now.
Exactly. And you're so generous with the resources as well. So for many people that are listening today, maybe for the first time, what can you tell us about how your vegan journey started and how, as a young woman, you formed what is known today as the most well-known animal rights organization in the world?
Well, I was a very slow learner, I must say. My father was what you'd call a gourmand, I suppose. And he was busy eating his way through the animal kingdom and taking me with him. So he liked calf brains on toast, and we went out and picked mussels off the rocks and all sorts of things. But I never saw it, even in this, this was going back, 60, almost 70 years. Back then, there were no animal rights activists. it was almost impossible to know a vegetarian. If you knew one, they were probably vegetarian, not even vegan, but for religious reasons. And there was almost nothing else that you ever saw that was vegetarian or vegan. So I loved animals, and I had a dog in our house who was like a brother to me. The two of us were just bonded, and yet no one ever questioned, and I never thought about all this until I was about 19. I had a fur coat, and I went to the United States and became a humane officer because I loved animals. One day, I found a fox caught in a steel trap, absolutely bug-eyed and frightened out of his wits. And then I realized where my fur collar came from on that coat. And gradually, bit by bit, this slow learner began to realize that animals don't go willingly and happily to slaughter. I found a pig who had been abandoned on a farm. The people had moved away, and he was still there. He was so thin. He'd been without food and water for days, and he had obviously been neglected before that. He was dying. I held him in my arms, and I took him to the water pump and gave him water. He made these little grunting, appreciative sounds. And then I was going to prosecute those people in my role as a humane officer. But that night on the way home, I was just thinking to myself, I wonder what I have to eat for supper. And I realized that I had defrosted some pork chops. That was the day before microwave ovens, and it was long before I had ever been in a slaughterhouse. But at that moment, the penny dropped, and I realized that I was paying somebody to slaughter a pig to go to a slaughterhouse. I mean, it must have been a terribly frightening experience for that animal. And yet I was going to prosecute somebody else for being cruel to a pig. So bit by bit, I just started to shed some of the old bad habits that I hadn't thought about. And then I read Animal Liberation by Peter Singer, which said to me, why are you even thinking about just treating animals kindly within the context of exploiting them? Aren't they just like you? And so I stopped exploiting them as much as I could in every way.
PETA has been involved in so many victories over the years. What have been some of the highlights for you personally?
Oh, every victory makes my heart sing. It really does. The smallest of victories involves a number of animals or one animal, and it's terrific. But I think for me, one of the biggest things, the biggest victories have been in vivisection, in animal experimentation, because the suffering there goes on for such a long time, and the animals are stuck in these steel cages, and you see them, they chew the bars, they work to try to get out, and they can't. And they have nothing comfortable. And every time that door knob turns and they know someone's coming in, their hearts just pound. Their adrenaline goes up. So their suffering is intense, and it's 24 hours a day, and sometimes it's for decades. So when we busted the Silver Spring laboratory, which was housing these poor monkeys who had had their spines cut and were then forced with electric shock to try to pick up things with their bad arms, like food, or they wouldn't eat. Busting that place and getting those monkeys out, the first in U.S. history, mm-hmm. was a huge coup. And following on that, I think the next biggest thing that still resonates with me was that PETA stopped all the car crash tests on animals worldwide. And now you see mannequins on television crashing into walls, computer simulators, and we made that happen. That was a wonderful thing for all the pigs and the baboons and the other animals who had been slammed into walls.
Yes, You've done so many. I mean, there's so many to choose from, and those are some highlights, definitely. The animal rights movement is almost 80% women, yet men seem to be the most visible in the movement in terms of, like, organization leaders, popular YouTubers, etc. I'm just wondering, as a woman, what obstacles have you faced over the years, and how did you work through them, and what kind of words of wisdom could you share with the women in the movement now?
Well, since the Me Too movement, that equation has changed a little bit, and there have been men in every spectrum of society, including in animal rights, who have left. And I think that's a wonderful thing in its own way. It's sad to see talented people and caring people in one way leave, but it's also the time has come to not have women accepted in that way in society and treated that way. And I think it's a precursor to our examination of how animals, the other animals, are treated and exploited, and how human beings are able to get away, just as men were able to get away with mistreating those they aren't. So I've never had a problem because I've always been a feisty woman. I was a feisty child. And my mother said, you would argue with anybody who entered the room. And that's just me. I have a burning sense of injustice. I don't like unfairness. I don't like injustice to any living being. And so I have found that it hasn't been anything that has held me back. I've been a deputy sheriff, I've been in law enforcement, and I'm not hesitant to say what I have the right to say and what I believe and to speak the truth. So I would say to any woman who is hesitant, I know it's easy for me to say, but try not to be, because you have the right to use your voice. You have the right to say and do what you wish to do. And the more of us who speak up and who will not tolerate cruelty in any form, the easier it's going to be to change the world. If you look at gay rights, when people were in the closet and they didn't say anything, people were allowed to make fun of gay people and to discriminate against them. And today, you really can't get away with that, because one after the other, people said, I'll admit it, I'm gay. And it took strength, it took courage. People were afraid of losing their jobs, but at some point there was a momentum. And I say to anyone, if you care about animals, never say, oh, I'm an animal nut, or, well, people make fun of me because. You're strong, you have good beliefs, you are honest and pure in what you believe, and don't hesitate. Force yourself to speak up and to stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves.
Thank you, Ingrid. That gives me goosebumps, and I hope, you know, it resonates with our listeners as well. That brings me to the topic of controversy. PETA is not without its share of controversy, as with many organizations. And the two most common ones I come across in talking with people is that people believe that PETA objectifies women in many of their campaigns, and PETA's dog euthanasia campaign. So I'd like to be more, I'd like to know more about this, and I'm sure our listeners would like to know more about it.
Sure. Those are two quite separate things, obviously. Mm. I'll address them in the order you mentioned them. I'm European, and I tend to think of prudism or this fear of displaying parts of your body as kind of odd. It's just, I don't think that women especially, but should take the role that men have traditionally had in telling other women to cover up. This isn't Afghanistan, and we're all strong. All the women who take off most of their clothes, some of their clothes, or all of their clothes to stick up for animal rights are Lady Godiva types, and they're free agents, and nobody is paying them or asking them to do it. It's what they want to do with their own bodies. And I think it takes nerve for another person to tell them, you need to cover yourself. Shame on you. I don't believe it for a minute that that's right. They are able to use their sexuality, their bodies, in any way that they wish to. I'm 69 now, at least I will be in a few days, and I have been in many nude protests, and I'm no looker, so don't tell me it's because I want men to stare at me or lesbians to stare at me. I am not attractive, and yet I've hung from a meat hook totally stark naked to make the point, which I wanted to make very fiercely, that I'm the same as those pigs who are hanging on the hooks next to me. My flesh is the same color as theirs, actually, and I wouldn't have wanted to die in fear the way they do, that we're all the same. And if I put clothes on myself, you can't tell that so much as if I strip down. And when someone like Pamela Anderson, God love her, who does so much for animals, uses her own body of her own volition to carve it into cuts of meat and say, look, those are my ribs. Don't eat animals' ribs, other animals' ribs, any more than you would put mine on a plate. I take my hat off to her. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. If you want to do it, do it. But I think people confuse sexuality, sexism, and so on with nudity. And it's just, to me, it's silly.
Thanks, Ingrid, for speaking on that.
The other thing you asked about is, of course, a very serious topic, mm-hmm. and that's something that was started long ago by the people in the meat industry who came up when deciding how to stop us from being such a threat, to accuse us of killing animals as if we somehow would take some delight in doing so, which I think you'd have to be crackers to even entertain for a second. I mean, we don't want animals killed for a sandwich, animals that are not even familiar to most people. So how on earth could anybody really think that, oh, Peter, we are rubbing our hands together and saying, ooh, let's kill dogs. If you look at our website, we have lots of video and photographs of the animals we take in. We have one shelter. It's in Norfolk, Virginia. It's at the top of a poverty pocket of upper North Carolina and lower Virginia. Our field workers go out every day, and the pictures would break your heart if you have a grain of compassion in it, because these are mostly pit bulls, and everybody has a pit. They may not have a car, there may not be a bus service, they may not have a job. But they have a pit bull on a heavy chain, like a tractor-trailer chain, out in all weather, in the burning sun, in the bitter winter, in all the storms. We're about to go into hurricane season down there. And they often go without a drop of water for days in the summer when they kick their water over. They go without water in winter when it's iced up. If they get heartworm, which is endemic in that area, they usually go without veterinary care. We find them. We provide dog houses free of charge. We sterilize all pit bulls free of charge. We've now sterilized over 153,000 dogs and cats on our mobile clinics, which has saved millions, easily millions of animals from being born unwanted. And we provide free euthanasia. And that's if there is an animal like, I'll give you an example, there are so many. In the last quarter, we took in 458 animals. And these are animals no other shelter wants. These aren't cute or fluffy or puppies. These aren't socialized animals. These are these dogs who live out on chains for the most part. And one of them, I'll just tell you about, his name was Mula. We visited him for 5 long years. We found him standing in water during floods on his chain with not a place to sit down, let alone lie and sleep. We found him out in the snow in winter. We provided him a doghouse. We provided him with straw. We moved him out of the water. We moved him out of the snow. We gave him shade by moving him under a tree in the burning heat of summer. We vaccinated him. We sterilized him. We did everything. And let no one say, why don't you call law enforcement? Where we can, we do. But we have many little jurisdictions down there where there is no humane society. There is no animal control. And the sheriff will not do anything to help. So we provide everything we possibly can to make those dogs' lives a little bit more comfortable, a little bit warmer, or a little bit safer. Anyway, just last month, we went out to visit Mula again, and we found that he had, I said heartworm is endemic. He was in last stages of heartworm disease. He had extended stomach. He was coughing. And his person said, you can now take him. And we did, and we took him, and we gave him a final wonderful meal, and we put him on a couch, first couch he's ever been in, one in his life. And our girls patted him and loved him, and then we put him to sleep forever. We euthanized him. And people have the gall to say we shouldn't have euthanized. Well, let me just say this. In our area, like many areas around the country, people can't afford to go to the vet for those final end-of-life services. People just don't have the money. They often aren't working. And some of them just won't do it. They just won't pay the money. They'd rather buy cigarettes or whatever. And we can't control them. We're not God. We're not the police. But we will take those animals in that other shelters turn away, and we will euthanize them free of charge, and we will let the people be with their animals if they wish to in those final moments, and we will even cremate the body at the end for them for nothing. So you can look on our website and you'll see the animals we are serving, and one of those services is end-of-life services.
Thank you so much, Ingrid, for talking about this, because I think people are so quick to read a headline and make a decision, you know, based on that. So it's really important that we have these stories and people can hear these real life stories. PETA has been controversial under their philosophy as, is it welfarist or is it abolitionist philosophy? How do you see PETA?
Oh, we've always had the same motto for the 38 years we've been in existence, which is that we believe animals are not ours. They're not ours to eat, to wear, to experiment on, to use in entertainment, or to abuse in any way. They're just others like us on the planet who happen to be discriminated against sorely and who are seen as objects or lesser or cheap burglar alarms or test tubes with tails or fur trim or meat on the hoof, and we don't see it that way. Now, when you're campaigning, you sometimes can't take an all-or-nothing approach. So while our goals are the elimination of all exploitation of all animals, no matter if they're cute, cuddly, known, unknown, whatever, but if we can get movement in the right direction, if we can chip away in the right direction, then we're happy. For example, just this last week, we managed to get Volkswagen to stop testing on animals. And there's a slight caveat there. They say, unless it's legally required. We will not continue to protest against them because we bought them 99% of the way there. If McDonald's, and this just happened in England, by the way, KFC in England has decided it's going to, after talking to us for 2 years, going to have a vegan chicken that they're going to sell. We're not going to say, don't go to KFC when this is being sold there, because they also sell real chickens who are slaughtered. We're going to say, go and get it and show them that there's a market for vegan chicken. So, you know, we're not purists, but we are pragmatists, and we want everybody to be moving in the right direction. We won't slap someone who becomes a vegetarian because they aren't a vegan, or, you know, who stops buying shampoo that's tested on animals but still buys a lipstick that is. we'll encourage them, but we'll say, come on, you can do better. Let's keep going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. What has personally drawn me to PETA over the years is your creative and art installation-like protests and demos. You recently became a shareholder in Canada Goose. I was wondering, what progress have you made working with Canada Goose?
Well, we're not working with them, I can tell you that. They're obstinate, and they are determined that they're going to expand. In fact, they're working on an opening in China this fall of a new store. And so we've been very vigorous. We spent a lot of money and time and resources reaching especially young people who apparently don't even think that that little bit of coyote on the back of the collar of the Canada Goose jacket comes from a real animal. We've shown that most of them thought it was fake because fake fur is now so almost indistinguishable mm-hmm. from real fur. So we're on campuses, we're talking to youth, we're taking out ads, we're demonstrating, we've bought shares in the company so that we can reach the shareholders. And we have protested at their openings of stores in various parts of the world. But really, it's going to be up to people on the street to go up to anyone who's wearing a Canada Goose jacket and say, please remove that piece of coyote. And let us show you the films of how the geese are slaughtered for Canada Goose jackets, the down filling. It's up to people to spread the word, use the leaflets, put the films on social media, and help us get through to Canada Goose, because all Canada Goose cares about is how many jackets it can sell.
Yeah. And we did a lot of work on that this year in Vancouver. I ask all of my interviewees how they practice self-care, and with the vast amount of horrific information and firsthand experience with animal cruelty that you've seen, how has your self-care evolved over the years?
Well, I think the enormity of the suffering is more than a human brain can take. It's more than a human heart can take. So if you want to keep working and doing things, whether it's for, you know, migrants who are being drowned coming across the sea to Europe from Somalia or something, whether it's for starving children, whatever it's for, you cannot dwell. You cannot, I hate to use the word wallow, but you cannot focus on the enormity of the suffering. I find the best coping mechanism for me is to put it, to force it out of my mind. If I'm going to sleep and I've got this vision of some horror that I've seen today, I talk to the computer between my ears and I just say, I'm not going to think about it, I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to think about the good things I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm going to have a night's sleep tonight. That may sound simplistic, but with discipline and repetition, it helps to force yourself to not think and picture what you know is going on, but to concentrate on what you can do and the positive things that are happening as a result of your action, to turn your anger into action, to turn your heartache into action, and to turn your love for animals into making sure that you do everything you can to reduce their suffering. That works for me.
Thank you. Where do you see the future of the animal rights movement, say, in the next 10 years?
Oh, that's a terribly difficult question. I don't have a crystal ball, but all I know is that if we really understand that a movement progresses because people extend themselves, because people inconvenience themselves, and people don't see it as just a hobby where you eat a vegan cupcake and you feel good, or you take your dog for a long walk, which is great, but that you speak to others and you show others things and you increase the number of people who understand and who see, that's how our movement grows. So it's up to us, each one of us, as to where this movement gets in the next 10 years. I am sure we're going to accomplish more and more successes. We win things every single week, if not every single day. But we really have to know how important each one of us is with our buying power, with our giving power, and with our habits, and with how we are able to influence those who provide services and products by letting them know what we want and what we don't want.
Thank you, Ingrid. You're so inspiring. You are speaking in Vancouver next week at the Vancouver Rowing Club. I'm so excited to hear your talk. What can you tell people about your world tour and your only stop in Canada?
I wish I could do more stops in Canada. I'm very fond of Canada, and I rarely get to come to Canada. Well, I'm going to be talking about one hesitates to use this word, but it's a buzzword these days, the intersectionality mm-hmm. between movements. Because to me, it's always been about one thing, which is stopping injustice. Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't matter who the victim is. What does it matter what color they are, what species they are, what gender they are, or where they're from? It just matters that a living being is being treated badly, and that we have many ways that we can stop that abuse, and that we can open people's minds and hearts and get them to see all the alternatives to treating others in bad ways. So I want to talk a little bit about, in this talk in Vancouver, about history and how we have evolved, where we once discriminated against people with disabilities and certainly against women. There are a lot of funny stories that in retrospect are funny, but were pretty bad at the time about how women were viewed. And get to a point of, why can't we see and make others see that there's a principle here? You know, when people didn't want to go to the Vietnam War, it shouldn't just have been that they didn't want to get hurt or killed themselves. There should have been a principle there that they believed the war was unjust. And the same thing is the case with animal rights. You know, you don't just stop eating animals because you're afraid of diabetes or cancer or heart disease. How wonderful if you stopped eating them because you knew that it was horrible to be in a truck that was heading to an abattoir, to a slaughterhouse, and that it was petrifying for them to be hung up by one leg, and that it was painful for them to go alive as their chickens into a scalding tank. And you just decided, I will not be part of that. My money will not go into that. If the principle was, it doesn't matter who it's happening to, I am not going to participate in that, and I'm going to try to get others to stop participating in it too. So I've got some funny stories. I've got some amusing videos. I've got some little bits of anecdotes about animals who did cute and wonderful things and how smart all kinds of animals are. And then the underlying message is, let's be as decent as we can be in living our lives, because sometimes when you're young, it seems as if your life stretches in front of you endlessly, but then time speeds up mm-hmm. and you find you don't really have that much left. That's where I am now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so excited to see you Thursday. It sounds like an amazing talk. And I heard that tickets are selling out fast, so better get your tickets, people.
Well, I look forward to seeing you there.
Okay, thank you, Ingrid.
Thank you very much.
Talk soon. Bye.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
You're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 CFRO. We are a non-commercial station bringing you voices and stories and perspectives you probably won't hear elsewhere. We are supported by members and by donations. You can become a member by going to our website at www.coopradio.org. If you like what you hear but don't want to be a member, that's cool too. You can still help by clicking on the donate arrow at the top right of the website. Co-op Radio thanks you for listening and for helping build our community of listeners and programmers.
You know I need your love. You got that hold over me. As long as I got your love, you know that I'm
happy. Eva Hamer is a music therapist, DXE undercover investigator, and open rescue activist. I met her last week at the Animal Liberation Conference. She led hundreds of us through song and music throughout the entire week. As activists, we bear an incredible weight in terms of what we witness and understand about animal exploitation. And I experienced the integration of music throughout the conference last week as the thread that held us together. Uplifting us, if you remember, Allison, at the dance on Sunday, creating community as we rode the BART bus.
I just have great memories of all those songs. They're still running through my head.
Me too.
And it's been over a week.
Yeah. And bearing witness, consoling us when bearing witness at the chicken slaughterhouse. I cannot imagine the week without the constant reassurance of those songs, Liberation and Courage, My Friend. So thank you, Eva, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Thanks so much for having me.
Why don't we start off by telling our listeners about your vegan journey?
Sure. Well, I've been vegan for a good long time. I went vegan at 13, and I think vegetarian about a year before that. And I'm not even really sure how I knew what veganism was, but I somehow got the idea that I wanted to try it for about a month, just as a challenge, you know, to see if I could do it. And only once I did that change did I kind of start to think about all the ethical reasons a person might choose to go vegan. So at that point, I really was convinced, and the thought of ever going back sort of filled me with dread. So for that reason, I really think that these 30-day challenges, these things that kind of focus on behavior change before all of the reasons, something I'm really in favor of. I didn't get involved in DXC and in animal rights activism until about 10 years into veganism, which is really a long time. I thought that disruption just sounded so scary, and I thought I'd never be able to do one. But eventually I worked up the nerve to go to my first protest, and ever since then I've gotten sort of increasingly involved and committed to animal rights activism.
And can you tell our listeners about the Animal Liberation Songbook and your experience with music in the movement and the impact of the last Animal Liberation Conference?
Sure. So I'm a music therapist, and I've been a music therapist just a little bit longer than I've been an activist. And that kind of gives me a perspective on music, which is that music is really here to help us with other parts of our lives. In music therapy, that's some pretty direct therapeutic goals, and in activism, I think about that as a way to kind of improve our group cohesion, our sense of identity as activists. It can help to communicate the values within the movement, let our own newer activists kind of know what we're about, and letting people outside the movement know what we're about. It can document history, it can put down the names of animals who we've rescued or animals who have died or activists who have done important work, among a lot of other reasons. I've really admired the musical tradition of the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World. They have a little red songbook and a tradition of doing a lot of singing in meetings. And similarly, I really admired which had the advantage of kind of being based in churches where music is a huge part of those rituals. And so I've kind of dreamed that we would have a similar strong musical culture in the animal rights movement. And I feel like this past week we sort of saw that start. So I started to write the Animal Liberation, or put together, compile the Animal Liberation Songbook 2 or 3 years ago, in direct kind of nod to the Little Red Songbook of the IWW. And we've had people submit songs to that from kind of all over. We have a lot of different songwriters who have submitted songs to the Animal Liberation Songbook. Anybody can access that by going to dxe.io/songbook, and that'll jump you right to this Google Drive folder, which has all the different songs with lyrics and chords, and sometimes links to recordings or recordings themselves right there in the songbook. So we've been compiling that kind of for the purpose of supporting this musical culture. And this past week at the Animal Liberation Conference, we just saw that the musical culture kind of explode into something really beautiful from the Thursday morning action Ashes of Speciesism, where I wrote a piece to be played during a funeral for non-human animals who had died as victims of animal agriculture, to a couple different sing-along times, to the more traditional performances at the vigil and at the talent show, and then, of course, music that kind of sprouted up organically during the Daylight Open Rescue, even on the bus on the way to jail, and during the all-day vigil as activists were bearing witness.
Yeah, you were one of 40 activists arrested last week at the Mass Open Rescue in California. Allison, King Zoom and I and hundreds of other activists were watching from the road singing Courage, My Friend. Tell us what that was like from your point of view, from the arrest to the bus ride to jail and then freedom.
It was a huge day. Rescuing the chickens was such an important part. 37 birds were taken out, 36 ended up surviving, and it definitely didn't go according to plan. I was leading a team that went into the farms and documented the conditions and rescued a few different animals, and at one point I was directed to approach the police with a bird in my arms to show the police how sick this bird was and to really just beg for compassion on her behalf. And the police ended up letting us take out all of the birds. They didn't stop us. They didn't make us return anyone, which I'm so grateful for. And we also negotiated with them to try to get them to allow us to really show them the inside of the barns to take out more individuals, to take out anyone we saw who was in particular distress. Those negotiations eventually broke down, and so we did end up doing civil disobedience, which 40 of us, as you mentioned, across the road and crossed a line of police officers who were all dressed up in riot gear as we were holding flowers and ready to get dressed up in our biosecurity suits. And they're dressed in riot gear and yelling at us to stop, that we will be arrested if we cross the line. Do that, to have these flowers and to be singing these songs. We could hear Jason Oliver was on the other side of the road leading us in song, and many of us continued singing throughout the arrest process, and even as we were sat down on the floor, and even as we were kind of moved to the other side of the barn, so that we were out of eyeshot of out of view of the other.
What was it like to spend time in jail? Were you there overnight?
We were there, I think it was about 12 hours between the time that we were arrested and the time that the last of us were released. Jail was, honestly, it was not so bad as you could imagine. I think it really depends on the jurisdiction. We were all put together, most of us, almost all of us were put together in the same room. And on the way to jail, we were put all together in a big bus. And I think we sang pretty much the entire way. I was really glad to have a big repertoire of animal rights songs to kind of keep everybody's spirits lifted.
And what was the reaction from the police when you were singing?
We only had one police officer in there in the bus with us, I think. And I couldn't really see him. Somebody said he had a little bit of a smirk on his face. I think that what I really noticed is that the police weren't used to having happy people in jail. We were really joyful. We were really happy about what we had done. A lot of people, if they go to jail, that's the worst day of their life. And for us, it was really a high point.
Mm-hmm. During the conference, we met Julie, the beagle. Was she the dog that was in the stroller being wheeled around? Was that Julie?
I believe Anna was in the stroller.
Okay.
Julie is a puppy who wasn't there quite as often as Anna was, but they were both rescued from Ridgeland and animal testing facility up in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. I had the chance, I don't know if you did, Allison, to watch that rescue in virtual reality. Wow.
I haven't seen that yet.
It was amazing. So you were part of that rescue. Can you tell us about that and how Julie's Law was created?
Yeah, absolutely. So that rescue was particularly notable because we really don't expect dog farms to look like factory farms of any other species. We think of dogs as kind of being the privileged of the non-human animals. But this place was a factory farm, just like any other. It really resembled a chicken farm in a lot of the ways that that matter. The smell was like any other factory farm. It was really, really terrible, even from a good distance. And the sounds were really like nothing you could ever imagine. You know, beagles are known to howl. And so when you have nearly 4,000 beagles all kind of crying out in stress, it sounds just really ghoulish and disturbing. The activists who went inside saw animals in cages. These cages were shared. They had maybe just a foot longer than their own body. A lot of signs of distress were observed, like you might have seen in the virtual reality animals, kind of reaching out their paws in the wires of the cages. We saw animals running in circles. That's how Julie was when she was found. And all of this, the cages are so small, but the regulations that the government's kind of thing totally allow animals to be kept in cages that small and not even ever let out let out of the cages for exercise. So Julie's Law is a campaign in two parts, federal and local. So federally, we'll be petitioning the National Institute of Health to ban the use of dogs in animal testing. And in local jurisdictions, we're advocating for legislation to give dogs basic personhood rights. Right now, for example, if someone were to hurt your dog, kill your dog even, you could maybe sue them for the monetary value of that animal. So if your dog is old and doesn't have monetary value, you pretty much have no legal recourse. We're advocating locally for personhood rights for dogs, so that dogs will have basic rights on their own and not just as an object with monetary value.
That's amazing work. Thank you for doing that. What kind of advice could you give activists based on your experience, what you've learned?
I think the most powerful thing about activism, or the most powerful thing that we can give to ourselves as community, because when we look at people who have done really courageous things, people who've risked prison time and put their own bodies at risk, those people are people with really strong communities and really strong trust in the team that they work with. And so when I think about activists who maybe don't know many other vegans or who mostly do their work online, who don't have so much in-person contact, I think that they're really robbing themselves of a lot of their power. I've heard it described like each person is really like, you know, like a raindrop. And it's only when we join together can we do things that are really, really powerful, thinking about, you know, the power of like an entire ocean. And so if you're the only vegan, you know, like I was for pretty much a decade, connecting with others in real life to build real friendships and real solidarity around activism is, I think, the single most important thing you can do to change the world. And if you do have those connections already, strengthening them and nurturing them is just more important than I can really describe.
That's incredible advice. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, I have to say at the conference the whole week, the sense of community that was really what brought us together, especially to culminate for that very last day. And, you know, I will take from that just memories of all these friends that I made who feel like a family to me. Mm-hmm. And trust was a big part as well. And I think that's why we all succeeded in how we did with all those actions that we did all week, because there was the trust in the community and the music too.
Mm-hmm. So finally, I asked all of my guests how they practice self-care. What does it look like for you?
On that note, I think that my activism really is my self-care in a way. I mean, the basics are important. There's no amount of, you know, essential oils or anything that's going to make up for not having enough water, enough sleep. But beyond that, I think community is still really important. I think that our society is kind of increasingly isolationist. You know, people live alone and work from home and just don't really join clubs and community groups as often as they used to. And it's like we've kind of forgotten that community is a basic human need. So like you said, I feel really nurtured whenever I'm able to be around people who kind of have good values in this world that really doesn't value animals' lives. And spending time with them kind of allows me to do things that are definitely more courageous than I could ever do without them.
Thanks, Eva. So you've written a song called Bella, and we're going to play that as our outro song. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how that song was created?
Sure. So this was written for the mother of Madison, and Madison was a baby piglet who was rescued near Toronto, from a gestation crate. These babies are taken from their mothers at only 17 days of life. A large percentage die from either starvation or disease or even being crushed even before that 17 days when they would be taken away. The song Bella promises Madison's mom, who was left behind, a good life for Madison and eventual ending of all animal farming. Currently, there's a case going on where activists who rescued a baby just like Bella are being charged with felonies for doing so. And you can find out more about that at dxc.io/Smithfield5, and you'll learn about the Smithfield case there.
Thanks for mentioning that. I'm following that closely.
Great.
Thank you so much, Eva, for being on the show. It's just the music last week has been so impactful, and yeah, it's amazing the work that you're doing. Thank you.
It was great talking with you. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay. You have been listening to Animal Voices 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. We will see you Saturday at the March to Close All Slaughterhouses March.
That would be tomorrow.
Yeah.
June the 9th, Saturday.
So you mentioned the first year they had it, there was 200 people.
Well, I've been going to marches for animals in Vancouver for many years now because we used to have the Walk for Farm Animals at Farm Sanctuary used to host, and Liberation BC would sponsor it here. So I was doing these marches from the beginning when we would have, I remember, kind of like 60 people, 100 people. We had 100 people for quite a few years. And then we changed it to the Vancouver March to Close All Slaughterhouses, which happens worldwide. And 2 years ago, there were 200 people. Last year, that doubled. There was 400 mm-hmm. people. And I want to see more people there this year because you and I participated in a 1,000-person march for animal liberation in San Francisco a few weeks ago, and that was amazing. We took over the streets of San Francisco. We will be doing the same tomorrow in mm-hmm. downtown Vancouver. So if you're planning to drive around downtown Vancouver tomorrow, don't, because you won't be able to. So it's going to be great. Meeting time is around noon tomorrow, and that's the Vancouver Art Gallery, and we will get assembled there, and we will march on the street starting at around 1 p.m. And there's mac and cheese if people right. want to pitch in for that. So we can actually post a link. If you go to the March to Close All Slaughterhouses, which I posted an event for that on our Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver, you'll find out about the mac and cheese event afterwards. And that's just a little fundraiser to help Liberation BC, who's putting on this great event. So be prepared for speak outs. I don't know if we'll do another die-in. We did that last year. Mm-hmm. Remember? Yeah, lots of chanting, and don't let the rain scare you away, because we need to make change for the animals. And one of the most effective ways to do that, I believe, is to take over the streets of your city and to let people know that animal liberation is coming, and you can't do anything about it, because we're just going to keep fighting for the animals until it happens.
Exactly. And any uncomfortableness we might feel is nothing compared to what the animals feel. So just remember that when you're coming out. Don't forget to get your tickets to see Ingrid Newkirk. I'm so excited. Can you tell?
I can tell. I'll be there too.
Good. I'm going to post the information on our website.
Yeah. And so that's happening next Thursday, June the 14th.
At 7 p.m.
Yeah.
And also, there is a new feature article on Allison Cole.
On Live Kindly. Yeah. That was just emailed to me right before the show. I haven't read it yet. So it's posted on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, if you want to check it out. Not even sure what's in it. We did an interview. So, and I interviewed Jody Monell from Live Kindly a few months ago. So mm-hmm. we traded.
Oh,
they
nice.
Interviewed me. Yeah. I also wanted to give a shout out to Surrey Chicken Save, which
yes.
is happening. It's a monthly vigil. It's happening this Sunday. Mm-hmm. I think they usually have them Saturdays, but it's this Sunday because of the march. That's 1 to 3 p.m. And go to Surrey Chicken Save on Facebook if you want to find out the details of where to find that out.
There's also a cube happening tonight to start off cube the activist weekend.
I just posted that on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And can I talk about next week's show, June 15th?
Sure can.
Okay, so what's happening on next week's show, just sort of leading off still from the events of last week and the mass open rescue that we participated in with 500 other activists, we will be doing an activist profile on Zoe Rosenberg. She's a teenage animal activist. She was involved with the mass open rescue last week. She was rescuing chickens, and 37 chickens were rescued, and she has the chickens now at her Happy Hen Sanctuary, where she has many rescued chickens from terrible situations. And I'm really looking forward to speaking with her, to speak to her about her activism. She's been doing some rodeo activism lately as well. I'm going to talk to her about that, and I want to find out how the chickens are doing, because we saw those chickens, right? We saw them suffering, and just to know that they are going to be able to have happy lives now. And I have been seeing evidence of this already. It's going to be a really inspiring interview, I think, and to also learn about all the work that Zoe does. We also have an interview with Peter Fricker from the Vancouver Humane Society about their current campaign against the Chilliwack Fair Rodeo that's happening here locally in August. It is rodeo season. Rodeo's happening all over the place.
Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals. This is a song by Eva called Bella.
I would have named you Bella if you were still with me. I would have found a place for you and your entire family. I cried so when I left you in the dirt and in the dark. Forgive me that I could not spare you. I couldn't set you free. I would have named you Bella. I would have kept you safe if there was any way at all to spare you from that place where your children were all taken after 17 short days. Although they knew you loved them, they never knew your embrace. Bella, I'm sorry. Rescued your daughter, and I promise you she's safe, protected from the moment that she passed over that gate. Bella, I think you're dead now, and I rage against the crime that you who had so Bella, there is no justice.